Good evening. Trump vetoes the defense bill, keeps up his threat to veto the stimulus, a new Secretary of Education in the works, and a beloved church burns on the Lower East Side as its historic congregation stands firm in their faith. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI News for Wednesday, December 23rd, 2020. President Donald Trump vetoed the sweeping defense bill that both chambers of Congress recently passed by veto-proof majorities. He'd previously threatened the veto because the National Defense Authorization Act, or NDAA, doesn't repeal Section 230, a law shielding internet companies from liability. The bill also includes limits on how much money Trump can move around for his border wall and requires the military to rename bases that honor figures from the Confederacy. Trump's veto comes after his pardoning of 15 people and commutation of five others. The pardons include a pair of congressional Republicans who were early supporters of Trump, campaign officials ensnared in the Russia probe, and government contractors involved in a massacre in Iraq. The massacre killed 17 Iraqi civilians, including 9 and 11-year-old boys, when private contractors from the U.S. security firm Blackwater opened fire in Baghdad's Nisour Square in 2007. A former Marine commander who saw combat in Iraq is retired Major Danny Surgeon. He reacts to Trump's veto and then tells his story.
He's not vetoing the NDAA for the right reason. There's plenty of reason to veto it, which is that it's an inordinate waste that hasn't been critically looked at, that there, you know, can't be an audit, you know, but that's not the reason that he's actually doing it, right? He's saying it's a gift to China and Russia without any specific details. And of course, that's ludicrous because U.S. military policy, U.S. spending, U.S. military posture has heightened a new Cold War with China and Russia. However, it is interesting that for a president who ostensibly was just in the pocket of Russia and working directly for Putin, that his policies have often actually been wildly aggressive and sort of catalyzing of more conflict with Russia. And so saying that part of the reason he's vetoing it is because it's a gift to China and Russia just complicates the whole narrative.
To complicate it further, this comes on the heels of his pardons of these Blackwater mercenaries who were convicted and sentenced to long prison terms for, by all accounts, was a brutal murder that's illegal under the laws of war that the U.S. subscribes to and trains its troops not to violate.
Well, I'm glad you said mercenaries, because that's what Blackwater is. Blackwater, we say private security company, right? That's a euphemism of euphemisms. These are very well paid, 2, 3, 4 times as much as an American soldier is paid to face more danger, right? Do more killing and dying. These are well-paid mercenaries, and these four individuals were part of a patrol that massacred 17 Iraqi civilians in Baghdad, two of whom were 8 and 11-year-old boys. What did that do? Well, it was a massive stain on the American war effort, of course, but it also helped catalyze further conflict, turn more Iraqis against us, and frankly, demonstrably got more Americans killed. Now, why do I say demonstrably? Well, perhaps it's anecdotal, but I have a bit of a personal tie here. I was in Baghdad when that happened, and I was told, screamed at by folks within Iraq who were pretty friendly with me previously, who said that was their breaking point. They didn't make any distinction between mostly white Christian boys from America who wore American Army camouflage and who wore slightly nicer, slightly better kitted out mercenary camouflage, but looked exactly the same. We were all occupiers. So when these folks broke the laws of war, massacred civilians, they catalyzed the insurgency. They acted as recruiting sergeants for the very same insurgents that were killing my soldiers. It should stain the Trump legacy, whatever isn't stained yet, if there's any open space, as much as anything he's done. And it's right in line with his pardoning of previous U.S. military war criminals this past year.
Now, just a few days ago, I noticed out of the corner of my eye a flight of rockets got launched at the U.S. embassy in Baghdad.
The reason that rockets get shot at the embassy in Baghdad is because U.S. troops remain in Iraq. And U.S. troops remain in Iraq not for the reason that we are ostensibly told, which is to, you know, help fight ISIS. Pompeo will say the real reason. So will half the think tanks. The real reason is to balance Iran. actually to wage secret war on Iran in many cases, including murdering its scientists and complicity with Israel, and then actually assassinating its generals. The problem is we've put an American target in Iraq, so Iranian-friendly-ish Shia militias tend to want to fire rockets at occupying soldiers. It wouldn't be all that different if there were Iranian troops or Iraqi troops in Texas. But this will be used to justify staying forever. They attack us because we're there, and then we stay forever because they attack us. And it is what we call a formula for forever war.
Retired Major Danny Surgeon, a former Marine combat commander. In Iraq, relatives of the Blackwater victims expressed fury with the pardons. Among the pardons are Nicholas Slatin, who was sentenced to life in prison without parole after being convicted of murder, while Paul Slow, Evan Liberty, and Dustin Hurd were convicted of manslaughter and weapons charges. Prosecutors said a convoy of Blackwater vehicles launched an unprovoked attack using sniper fire, machine guns, and grenade launchers. And President Donald Trump's threatening to torpedo Congress's massive COVID-19 relief end-of-year package in a move reminiscent of a Godzilla monster movie. Trump's demanding changes that fellow Republicans have opposed, increasing direct payments for most Americans from $600 to $2,000 for individuals and $4,000 for couples. He spoke in a video shown on Twitter last night.
It really is a disgrace. For example, among the more than 5,000 pages in this bill, which nobody in Congress has read because of its length and complexity, it's called the COVID relief bill, but it has almost nothing to do with COVID. The $900 billion package provides hardworking taxpayers with only $600 each in relief payments, and not enough money is given to small businesses, and in particular restaurants, whose owners have suffered so grievously, they were only given a deduction. I am asking Congress to amend this bill and increase the ridiculously low $600 to $2,000 or $4,000 for a couple. I am also asking Congress to immediately get rid of the wasteful and unnecessary items from this legislation, and to send me a suitable bill, or else the next administration will have to deliver a COVID relief package, and maybe that administration will be me, and we will get it done.
Democratic members of the Congressional Progressive Caucus reacted positively to Trump's call for a $2,000 stimulus check. Let's do it, Ocasio-Cortez tweeted. Representative Rashida Tlaib and I already co-wrote the COVID amendment for $2,000 checks, so it's ready to go, she wrote. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer tweeted Tuesday, Democrats had spent months trying to secure $2,000 checks, but Republicans blocked it. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she's on board for $2,000, but she urged Trump not to veto the current stimulus bill. A professor of law at Columbia University is Michael Gratz. He's author of The Wolf at the Door, The Menace of Economic Insecurity and How to Fight It. Gratz says the bill is crucial, and in normal times would be an important step. But he adds these times are anything but normal.
I don't call it a stimulus bill, I should say, Paul. I believe it's a survival bill for many Americans, particularly those who are unemployed, because if you're a freelancer or an independent contractor, you're not covered under any of the state unemployment programs, and all of your benefits were going to run out at the end of the year. And this program extends them for a few months into March, and it provides an additional $300 a week, which is half of what they had originally gotten, more than they might have gotten. In that sense, it's very important. It also extends the moratorium on evictions, so landlords can't throw people out on the street, which couldn't be more important in the winter. It's $900 billion, and that's real money. If we had a reasonable Congress that did things in stages, this would actually be quite sensible.
The rationale, it seems that since the days of Reagan, they talked about welfare queens, people cheating on welfare and food stamps, and the whole idea of the undeserving poor getting money from the hardworking poor Americans. And what has happened in the last 6 months and year has put the lie to all of that. And now the Republicans are set to have to contradict 40 years of Republican politics and pour trillions of dollars into social aid beyond anything, the wildest dream of Ronald Reagan or any of the Democrats who ran against him.
We've learned two things. One is just how weak the U.S. safety net is when you have an unexpected shock to the economy. We should have learned that during the financial crisis more than a decade ago. This has made it all too obvious. People are living precarious lives in terms of their economic security and their job security. And this pandemic has closed up a lot of businesses that are not going to reopen again. And for some reason, as you suggest, there is a tendency to blame people who lose their jobs for losing their jobs. It's not the unemployed workers' fault. And yet we see, keep somehow trying to ascribe fault to people and suggesting that they don't want to go back to work. And that couldn't be more false, couldn't be further from the truth. People want to work. That's where they get their dignity. That's where they get the food to put on the table and the money to pay their rent. And unemployment insurance is so weak, it doesn't really cover the losses that people suffer. And but yet somehow there is this view that if we gave them a little extra money, they just stop working, which couldn't be further from the truth.
The article about the party, the COVID-defying party at Mar-a-Lago by the Young Republicans, where they were firing money cannons at the crowd and it was raining money and everybody was cheering that and saying, that's the America we want. There's a problem with that in this country, that kind of thinking.
There's a huge problem with people who get enormously lucky, some of whom have worked very hard and deserve to be lucky, but they get enormously lucky. They think it's all they're doing. They don't understand that the society is enabling them to succeed in a way beyond their wildest dreams so that they can shoot money cannons off and belong to Mar-a-Lago if you want to. It's really outrageous. It reminds you of the Great Gatsby.
Michael Gratz is professor of law at Columbia University. He's author of The Wolf at the Door, The Menace of Economic Insecurity and How to Fight It. And the government is reporting another 800,000 people are asking for unemployment insurance this week, on top of nearly 900,000 new applications last week, and job losses continue throughout the economy and the country. Economist Jack Rasmus is author of several books, including Central Bankers at the End of Their Rope. He says the need is critical.
It's depression-level joblessness out there. There's a 40% increase in jobless filings in just 2 weeks, from 1 million to 1.4 million, and it's going to keep going higher. It's a crisis, a disaster. And what are they doing? They're throwing peanuts in this $900 billion so-called bill. They're throwing peanuts at people. $300 a week instead of $600 a week.
We went through one depression 80 years ago. Maybe they feel it's in their interest not to publicize the fact that the country is that vulnerable.
Look, 11.4 million people are behind on their rents. 11.4 million people, $70 billion behind on their rents. They're going to start getting evicted. This moratorium on eviction only applies to certain federally funded apartment buildings. The evictions are going to continue anyway, and it's only $25 billion, that's probably going to go to the landlords, and you've got $70 billion back rents that are going to have to be paid. You've got millions of public workers who had their payroll tax deferred back in August by Trump, who are now, January, going to have to start paying double payroll taxes. You've got 35 million students who are behind hundreds of billions of dollars in their student loans. Okay, so they extended that a couple months here. But they're going to have to start paying double come February, March. And the other thing about this bill is it's not a stimulus, you see. It's not going to stimulate the economy. It's a mitigation bill. It's designed to buy a couple more months, 2 to 3 months, a little bit. The Democrats are saying, oh, we'll come back for more here after Joe Biden gets confirmed here. Mitch McConnell is not going to let him have any more, especially if he wins those two seats down in Georgia. It's going to be no, no, no for 4 more years.
Trump lost, but he lost because every college student in America, every liberal, every person to the left of Attila the Hun came out in droves, but that they can't keep it going because the working class, who are the most affected by what you're saying, are breaking entirely for Trump.
It's not just the working class here. You can't blame the working class for it all. I believe the reason is this. Why did so many people vote for Trump? White European ethnic background Americans are terrified about the changes that have been coming in America. A majority almost here soon is going to be people of color. They're terrified not simply that they'll lose their jobs to the immigrants, which that whole group is people of color to white European Americans. They're afraid. They're afraid of the changes coming in America. And Trump and his minions have exploited that very cleverly to make them think that it's people of color who are already here or who are coming here, whether they're Muslim or whether they're Latin, Latino or Asian or blacks here, whatever. These are the people who are taking away your America. And because of that, they see him as the bulwark against these cultural, social, political changes coming, and they will support this guy no matter what, because he is standing in the line attempting to block the changes that are coming that can't be stopped.
What's the way out of this, if there is one?
We're headed for another contraction here in the first quarter of 2021. You're gonna see GDP and numbers collapse here in the fourth quarter. Economists are saying maybe 1%, 1.5% GDP growth after 7.4% in the third quarter and a negative 10.5% in the second quarter. In other words, the rebound has pretty much gone. There is no further growth. Most of the economy is service-based, and that's falling apart. It's going to be more of the last 8 years, especially the last 5 years, where McConnell and the Republicans just stop everything, not compromise in any way, and they're out to destroy the Democrats.
Economist Jack Rasmus is author of several books, including Central Bankers at the End of Their Rope. A new Harvard study with the Movement Advancement Project says COVID-19 has impacted LGBTQ households more than any other households, especially if they're Black or Latinx. More than 1 in 8 LGBTQ households lost health coverage since the pandemic started, and 64% of such households have lost a job due to the pandemic as well. That's twice the average. For Black people, the job losses are 95%, and for those who are Latinx, that number is 70%. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. It's 41 degrees in New York City, clouds increasing after midnight with rainfall expected tomorrow and a high of 59 degrees. President-elect Joe Biden introduced Miguel Cardona as his pick for education secretary today. Cardona is in charge of Connecticut's education department. He's a native of the state as well. He spoke about growing up in the projects.
It's the choice my grandparents made. Avelino and Maria de la Paz Cardona and Hermana Muñiz Rosa, when they made their way from Aguada, Puerto Rico, for new opportunities in Connecticut. I'm proud to say I was born at the Yale Lakers housing projects. That's where my parents, Hector and Sarah Cardona, instilled early on the importance of hard work, service to community, and education. I was blessed to attend the public schools in my hometown of Meriden, Connecticut, where I was able to expand my horizons and become the first in my family to graduate college and become a teacher, a principal, an assistant superintendent in the same community that gave me so much. That is the power of America. And I, being bilingual and bicultural, am as American as apple pie and rice and beans. We need schools to be places of innovation, knowing that this country was built on innovation. And for far too long, the teaching profession has been kicked around, not given the respect it deserves. It shouldn't take a pandemic for us to realize how important teachers are for this country. For too many students, public education in America has been a flor pálida, a wilted rose. Neglected, in need of care. We must be the master gardeners who cultivate it. And I'm grateful for the trust you've placed in me, Mr. President-elect and Madam Vice President-elect. I look forward to getting to work on behalf of America's children and the families and the communities and the nation they will grow up to inherit and lead.
Miguel Cardona is Joe Biden's nominee as Secretary of Education. If confirmed, he'll replace current Secretary Betsy DeVos, the brother of Eric Prince, who founded the mercenary security firm Blackwater Worldwide. And the director of product strategy and security for the firm Dominion Voting Systems has sued the Trump campaign, Rudy Giuliani, Trump advisor Sidney Powell, and several conservative media outlets. The defendants in the suit and President Donald Trump have repeatedly accused Dominion, with no evidence, of a conspiracy to overturn the election, including wild accusations of Venezuelan influence over Dominion. Trump has lost his bid in more than 50 courts and twice before the United States Supreme Court. The suit says Trump's allegations are false and baseless, causing immense injury to the reputation, professional standing, safety, and privacy of Eric Coomer, Dominion's director of product strategy and security. Newsmax and Fox News have both made extensive retractions in recent days of claims made against Dominion. And gridlock at an English port kept thousands of truckers and travelers stranded today, raising fears of food shortages. Prime Minister Boris Johnson had announced a new version of the coronavirus, and it may be a more contagious form of the disease. Another variant found in South Africa has researchers fearful it might be more deadly and affecting children than the prevalent strain. Nations around the world began barring people from Britain over the weekend. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has been trying to use his limited powers to demand flights from the UK to New York test all passengers for the virus. Cuomo adds the federal government is nowhere to be found.
It is more dangerous. How much more dangerous? We don't know. We don't know if it's more deadly. We don't know if the vaccine works on it or not. We think the vaccine works on it. That's our quote-unquote working assumption. But it is real and it is dangerous. It is traveling around the world as we speak. 120 countries now require testing before people leave the UK or ban people from the UK. That is not a personal opinion. That is a fact. When you hear those facts, you have to say to yourself, what? What happened? And what are we doing? And why are we not doing what 120 other countries that are far less sophisticated, that paid far less of a price for COVID, that didn't have the experience that we had? Why aren't we saying test the travelers in the UK before they get on a plane? I don't know if they're just checked out. And if they're checked out, they should resign. I don't know if they are, because it's in the midst of a transition, then you should say, Mr. Joe Biden, why don't you make this decision? But to do nothing, when you know the virus is coming here, when you say it may already be here, it's just the greatest failure to do one's job.
Governor Cuomo, 2020 is on track to be the deadliest year in U.S. history, with deaths topping 3 million for the first time. In addition, the U.S. could see a decline of 2 to 3 years in life expectancy, the steepest drop since World War II. According to U.N. statistics, 35 other nations, including much of Europe, have longer lifespans than Americans. And earlier this month, Middle Collegiate Church burned in a devastating 6-alarm fire, apparently started in botched electrical wiring in a vacant next-door building. While the facade of the church is still standing, most of the structure had to be taken down to avoid a collapse. The congregation has worshipped in New York since 1628. Its first church was built on Nassau Street in 1731. The current building on 2nd Avenue near 6th Street was built in 1891. Its church bell rang on July 9, 1776, when the Declaration of Independence was read for the first time in New York. It's been called the Second Liberty Bell. After an inspection, the bell was found undamaged in the church belfry. The church is known for its political activism and is a home to artists and performers. Reverend Jackie Lewis, senior minister at the church, opens this collage of sound from people at the church.
I'm telling my congregation, you know, blessed are they that mourn, for they will be comforted.
We don't have to pretend that we don't hurt. I say we hurt so much because we love so much. We grieve so hard because we have such incredible memories here. We are devastated because there are decades of baptisms and weddings and celebrations and concerts and puppets and dance and art.
I didn't want to believe what happened to our church. So I needed time. I knew lots of people were devastated and felt empty, sad. So what I could do is to encourage people with joy, love of music. Jesus.
It was just magical when the lights would go down and they would sing Silent Night and we'd light the candles. Oh, I'm getting like teary-eyed thinking about it. But it was just magical.
So we will do a candlelight at 11 p.m. on Christmas Eve in your window, in your sanctuary, on your stoops. Light a candle that signifies that Christ is not bound by the building. That's our new action.
No matter what the material thing is, what the brick and mortar thing is, that's not Christmas. Christmas is your spirit connecting with others and lifting them up. And I think that's what Christmas will be this year.
A collage of sounds from the Middle Collegiate Church on 2nd Avenue. The fire displaced more than 20 women living at Hopper Home. That's a single women's shelter next door. No one was injured in the fire. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, December 23rd, 2020. The news is produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson from New York City. I'm Paul DiRienzo for the WBAI News. Thanks for listening.